Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and Steve Ember. But first, this report with help from Alice Bryant. Colleges and universities are working hard to close deep budget deficits. And some have been pushed close to financial ruin because of actions taken to protect people from the new coronavirus. Those measures have led to financial losses that could reach $100 million at some schools in the United States. Ohio State University and the Nebraska State College System are among the schools returning money to students for things like meal plans and housing. Many schools are losing even more money from ticket sales after sports seasons were cut short. And some say the value of their investments has shrunk because of wild swings in stock prices. Yet even if school buildings reopen later this year, many U.S. experts on higher education worry large numbers of college students will not return. There is widespread fear that the weak economy will leave many Americans unable to pay for college. University officials are predicting sharp drop-offs among international students because of the coronavirus crisis as well. This is not only a concern in the U.S. In Britain and Australia, higher education leaders are also expecting billions of dollars in losses. Many colleges and universities have stopped filling job positions and suspended work on building projects so they will have enough money to pay employees. Johns Hopkins University in Maryland is famous for keeping detailed records of coronavirus cases and deaths. In a recent statement, the university's president, Ronald Daniels, warned of possible employee dismissals. Johns Hopkins expects a net loss of $100 million in 2020 and up to $375 million in losses in 2021.
Mary Papazian is president of San Jose State University in California. She estimates her school will lose $16 million by the end of May. "We may be looking at cutting academic programs if it comes to it," she told the Associated Press. But college and university presidents say their savings will only go so far. Many are asking their states and the federal government for more financial support to avoid deeper cuts. In March, U.S. lawmakers passed a $2 trillion bill to help Americans hurt by the coronavirus pandemic. President Donald Trump signed the bill into law. The measure provides $14 billion for U.S. higher education. The American Council on Education, a group of college presidents, had requested $50 billion and called the bill woefully inadequate. Even colleges with large endowments are expecting a painful financial hit from the pandemic. On March 31st, Yale University asked its department heads to amend their budgets in preparation of major losses. The current conditions leave some colleges wondering if they can meet students' requests for financial assistance. Demands for financial aid are expected to increase as millions of Americans lose their jobs in the economic downturn. Many schools use their endowments to pay for financial aid, employees' wages, and normal operations. But their investments have suffered deep losses as the value of stock shares dropped.
In Massachusetts, the endowment at the College of the Holy Cross has dropped in value by 15%. Officials there fear a similar drop in financial donations. Perhaps the greatest question for schools is about what will happen in late summer. Recent studies have found that large numbers of high school students plan to take a gap year before starting college. At the same time, colleges and universities have been forced to cancel school visits and other events designed to appeal to future students. Student enrollment is also a major concern for colleges and universities that have come to depend on international students, especially those from China. Nearly 3,000 Chinese students attended the University of Connecticut last autumn. University officials say they are preparing for international student enrollment to drop by 25 to 75%. That will represent a loss of up to $70 million next year. James Palmer says many American states had been slowly increasing their financial support for higher education over the past 5 years. But it is highly unlikely they will be able to continue doing so in the weeks and months to come. Palmer is a professor of higher education at Illinois State University. He also works for Grapevine, a yearly study of state support for U.S. colleges and universities. He told VOA a big problem is that many schools are still struggling with the immediate needs of student safety and moving classes online. As a result, they do not have the ability to think too far ahead.
There really is no playbook or script for this. Right now, colleges and universities are in crisis mode, noted Palmer. However, Brian Mitchell, a former president of Bucknell University in Pennsylvania, argues U.S. higher education is stronger than it appears. Mitchell co-wrote the book, How to Run a College. These institutions have been around, in many cases, for 150 to 200 years, and they have faced other major crises, he told VOA. They have shown they can do it, many of them. But whether they can, precipitated by a pandemic, is an open question. Mitchell says some colleges may close, but others may join with other schools to share financial resources. He is most concerned about what will happen to colleges with small endowments. Many of these schools often serve local communities and poor and minority students. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. The last Friday in April is National Arbor Day in the United States. Arbor Day celebrates the role of trees in the world around us. Each year, organizers call on Americans to plant trees and care for them. Trees do a lot for the environment. They clean the air around us. Some trees, such as apple and pear, give us fruit. Trees also provide shade for us and other creatures. Some animals build their homes inside trees or on strong tree branches. People and animals can use the wood from trees for building materials. You might find this strange, but trees can be fun to watch. You can just sit back and watch birds high up in the trees. If you live in an area with squirrels, watching them run up and around trees, jumping from one to the next, can be a lot of fun. And that brings us to our expression for today, to bark up the wrong tree. In fact, this expression is more like an idiom. Now, you might think that bark in to bark up the wrong tree means the strong outer covering of a tree, but that is not the right bark. In our expression today, bark means the sound a dog makes. Dogs bark a lot. They bark when they want to go outside for a walk. They bark when they see other dogs. They bark when they chase other animals, such as cats and squirrels. Now imagine that a dog chases a squirrel up a tree. That is a lot of work, for the dog, that is. Dogs cannot climb trees. Squirrels, on the other hand, are expert climbers of trees and just about anything else. A squirrel may go up one tree, but then jump to another. The dog simply can't follow the squirrel. So it stays on the ground, barking and barking up the wrong tree. And that is where we get our idiom. When a dog barks up a wrong tree, they are barking up a tree that no longer has their prey, the squirrel. For people, barking up the wrong tree means following a mistaken plan of action. If I bark up the wrong tree, I am doing something that will not get the result I want. I am wrong about the reason for something, or possibly the way to get something. For example, at a party, I noticed that my coworker, Jonas, is interested in a good friend of mine named Ursula. But Ursula is happily married, which is bad news for Jonas. So I say to him, "Jonas, I know you want to ask Ursula out on a date, but you are barking up the wrong tree. She is very happily married." Now, let me tell you about another person who used the wrong way to get something. A friend of mine, Sharon, needed money for her new business idea. So she went to an event to meet possible investors. However, the only people she met were other people looking for money. She spent the whole time barking up the wrong tree. Now, keep this in mind when using this expression. While Americans do say bark up the wrong tree, we would not say bark up the right tree. So, if you came to the VOA Learning English website to learn English, I would not say you are barking up the right tree. I would just say, "Welcome, you've come to the right place." Join us again next week when we explore words and expressions in American English. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of the presidency of George W. Bush. His first term came to be defined by the worst terrorist attack against the United States in the nation's history. George W. Bush had been in office for less than 8 months when the events of September 11th, 2001 took place.
A plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
Good Lord, this is just a horrific moment.
The day is remembered as 9/11. On that morning, 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four large passenger airplanes on the East Coast. The planes were flying to California, so they were heavy with fuel. Each group of hijackers included a trained pilot. American Airlines Flight 11 had just left Boston, Massachusetts, when five hijackers seized control of the plane.
Is that American 11 trying to call?
We have some planes. Just stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're returning to the airport.
American 11, are you trying to call?
Number three in the back. The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mace that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
Nobody move. Everything will be okay. If you try to make any move, you'll danger yourself and the airplane. Let's stay quiet.
Shortly before 9 o'clock, the hijackers crashed the Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City.
A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center. It happened just a few moments ago.
The World Trade Center, Tower number 1, is on fire. The whole outside of the building, it was just a huge explosion.
Five other hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 175, another Boeing 767, also on a flight from Boston.
Hey, can you look out your window right now? Can you see a guy at about 4,000 feet, about 5 East Airport right now? Looks like he's...
Yeah, hi, Sam.
You see a guy, look, is he descending for the plane also?
He's descending really quick, too, yeah.
Well, that's...
Close 500 feet now. He just dropped 800 feet in like one sweep.
That's another situation.
Another one just hit the building.
Well, hit it hard. Another one just hit the World Trade.
The whole building just came apart.
They crashed the jet into the South Tower of the World Trade Center a short time after the first plane hit the North Tower.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane. You just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of view.
Yes, and that's the second explosion. You could see the plane come in. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway in downtown New York.
The Twin Towers each had 110 floors. They were the tallest buildings in New York and among the tallest in the world. They stood a few streets away from the New York Stock Exchange in the heart of the Wall Street Financial District in Lower Manhattan.
Oh my God!
Oh my goodness, there's another one.
The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke pouring from the skyscrapers. Thousands of people were in the buildings. Many workers on the floors below where the planes hit were able to escape. Others on the floors above were trapped. Some apparently felt their only choice was between burning to death and jumping. News cameras showed disturbing images of bodies falling from the towers. The South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed just before 10 o'clock. After burning for almost an hour, the North Tower came down about 30 minutes later. It had been hit first and had burned for 1 hour and 42 minutes.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed. The entire building has just collapsed as if a demolition team set off, when you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, down on itself, and it is not there anymore.
Investigators later found that the intense fires from the jet fuel, burning for as long as they had caused the structures to fail. The ruins of the two buildings quickly became known as Ground Zero. Several other buildings in the World Trade Center complex were damaged or destroyed as a result of the collapse of the Twin Towers. Another group of hijackers took over American Airlines Flight 77, a Boeing 757. The plane had taken off from Washington Dulles International Airport.
Okay, American Airlines is still airborne. He's heading towards Washington. I think we need to scramble Langley right now, and I'm gonna take the fighters from Otis and try to chase this guy down if I can find
Mick Leshefsky has some new information at the Pentagon. I hope you'll stand by and continue to talk with us. Mick?
Katie, I don't want to alarm anybody right now, but it felt just a few moments ago like there was an explosion of some kind here at the Pentagon.
The hijackers crashed the plane into the Pentagon, the Department of Defense headquarters, across the Potomac River from Washington in Arlington, Virginia.
We're on the E-ring of the Pentagon. We have a window that faces out toward the Potomac, toward the Kennedy Center. We haven't been able to see or hear anything after the initial blast. I just stepped out in the hallway. Security guards were herding people out of the building. And I saw just a moment ago as I looked outside, a number of construction workers who have been working here have taken flight. They're running as far away from the building as they can right now.
The plane exploded a hole into one of the five sides of the huge building. And four hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 93, another 757. That plane had taken off from Newark, New Jersey.
United 93, that traffic through is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
People on the flight learned about the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington through phone calls to loved ones.
It looks like he descended there.
United 93, verify 350.
United 93, Cleveland.
Go ahead, Frank.
Do you have United 93 south of Chardon?
We hear some funny noises. We're trying to get him.
Do you have him?
No.
Some of the 40 passengers and crew members fought to retake control of the plane from the hijackers.
United 93 was waving his wings as he went past the VFR aircraft. They don't quite know what that means. Rocking his wings.
Air traffic controllers and law enforcement officials struggled to make sense of the events taking place that morning.
United 93, have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land? Because we have information.
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
Okay, there is now on that United 93.
Yes.
There is a report of black smoke in the last position I gave you. 15 miles south of Johnstown.
Flight 93 crashed in a field near the small town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The intended target for Flight 93 may have been the Capitol, the building where Congress meets. No one could be sure if other airliners were involved in the terrorist operation.
The Federal Aviation Administration has actually gone even further than it did a few minutes ago. It was asking all planes not to take off. Now the FAA has ordered all aircraft currently in the air over the United States to land at the nearest airport.
Air traffic controllers began the complex job of getting all planes across the country and those heading in over the Atlantic onto the ground safely.
So this meant at very early in the morning, as flights were halfway across the Atlantic Ocean to land in the United States, we had already initiated protocols to shut those arrivals off from the oceanic areas, and they had to make tough decisions such as either turn around and go back to Europe or go to alternate destinations, which many of them did in Canada.
Canadian officials assisted. They allowed flights from across the Atlantic to land in eastern Canada, including at airports in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Gander, Newfoundland. Almost 3,000 people died in the 9/11 attacks.
You got it coming in from building number 2 on the 97th floor. People trapped.
9-1-4. We're all around the building. We're completely around the building. We're into the building now. Okay.
Most of the victims worked in the World Trade Center.
Battalion 7, Operation Tower 1.
The victims also included rescuers, among them 343 New York City firefighters. They died trying to save others.
You're going to have to get a different elevator. We're chopping through the wall to get out. Maybe you're
allowed to command with that. 911. Pictures of missing persons began to appear in the city as loved ones waited and worried. 3 days after the attacks, President Bush went to Ground Zero. He spoke to the rescue workers and promised that the attacks would be answered.
I want you all to know, America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Each day, thousands of visitors came to see the site and to honor those who died. At the Pentagon, people left flowers and messages of sympathy near the heavily damaged wall. 184 people died in the attack on the Pentagon, including the victims on the plane. It took months to clear the wreckage of the Twin Towers. The attacks in New York changed the distinctive skyline of Lower Manhattan. The Twin Towers, completed in 1973, were gone. The economic effects of 9/11 were felt far beyond America's largest city. The New York Stock Exchange stayed closed until September 17th. When it reopened, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a measure of leading stocks, fell by what was then its biggest point drop ever in a single day. Among the companies most affected by the attacks were airlines and other businesses that depend on travelers. The nation's skies were empty of commercial flights for 3 days after the hijackings. And when flights returned to normal, many people were too afraid to fly. Thousands of hotel workers and others in the travel industry lost their jobs. The shock and sadness of the 9/11 attacks brought Americans together less than a year after the disputed presidential election. In a show of patriotism, more and more American flags began to appear on homes, cars, and businesses. Small American flag pins were worn by many Americans. The attacks pointed to the work of Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization. On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.